Ready?
Yep.
The police guys are ready too.
They're coming from Myrtle.
Yeah, probably.
That's why she's wearing a top hat and a bow tie.
Mm-hmm. She's incognito right now.
Yes. Welcome back to Puffcast, your Harry Potter happy place. This is episode 68 on December 14th, 2022, and I am Melanie.
And I'm Juliana, and this week we have the one, the only, the Percy Weasley himself. It is Mr. Chris Rankin. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Woohoo!
Thank you, thank you, thank you for having me.
Oh, that was so gorgeous.
Little song to start us all off with.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Mel and I are super excited to have you on the podcast, and it's so exciting to finally have a Weasley on the podcast.
Yes.
Well, if you're going to have a Weasley, you've got to have everyone's seventh favorite. That's usually the best place to start, I think. So.
I mean, I wouldn't say you're everyone's seventh favorite. You're so active in the fandom, honestly, that I feel like you've ranked yourself up.
It's been 22 years of work, Juliana, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And it's paying off,
yes.
You know?
Hopefully.
You're now sixth favorite.
Yes.
Awesome. So before we get into our main discussion, Chris, let's get your fandom ID. So your pronouns, your house, your Patronus, your wand, and most importantly, your favorite food that is not pizza.
Oh, God. You see, I saw that on the Google Doc, and I was like, I generally don't know what my favorite food is other than pizza.
That's a very, yeah, very common thing that happens here, yeah, is that, and that's why we've specified specifically that it cannot be pizza.
Okay, so my pronouns are he, him. I am a Ravenclaw. Ooh. In the real world. My Patronus is a wombat.
That's cute.
Don't ask, don't know. I don't actually know what my wand is. Is that
oh my goodness. Wand. Okay, so we have a lot of wand makers out here. So Chris, talk to us. Tell us what you would want from a wand, because I have a feeling that there may or may not be a wand maker who's listening to this podcast right now who may be rushing over to their lathe to make you a wand.
I think I would want a wand that is unique, certainly. Okay. I mean, all wands are unique, mm-hmm, but with somewhat of an eccentric flair to it.
Okay. Are there colors? Are there like metal pieces? Are there jewels? How do you feel about
that?
Yeah,
I see metal pieces. I see kind of sort of, yeah, I mean, my kind of aesthetic is generally that industrial kind of thing anyway. I like sort of, you know, sort of blacks and metals and cogs and sort of steampunky, but not steampunky.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, sort of rustic chic, I guess, is my kind of aesthetic, yeah. I guess.
Interesting.
Practical, yet stylish. I think that's where I am. Oh, it's where I want to be.
Rustic, chic, steampunk, practical.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a strong feeling we have a wand maker. Honestly, we know so many wand makers, and we have a ton that listen to this show. And I have a feeling that at least one of them is going to make you a wand. So stay tuned, Chris. You may or may not have a custom wand coming to you in the mail.
Excellent. Excellent. Never say no.
We've set up more than one person before.
Oh, good. Of course you have. You're those kinds of people. You're Hufflepuffs.
Yes.
You're helpful. And yeah. Now, my favorite food that is not pizza.
It's a hard question.
It is. Now, I am currently in the south of France this week, and I did an interview for the concert that I'm doing in a few places this week. And one of the places I'm going to is Grenoble, mm-hmm, which is sort of in the French, yeah, basically in the French Alps. And it is the home of fondue and raclette. So I am going to go, because I'd forgotten until this interviewer journalist mentioned raclette how much I bloomin' love raclette. So let's go with that. Anything with melty cheese on it, which I know does include pizza.
That would include pizza technically speaking.
Yeah, but give me a croque monsieur, give me a croque madame, give me cheese on toast.
Mm.
I don't know, even like a mac and cheese with lots of stringy melty cheese all over it. Yeah, melty cheese is the way forward. A poutine, even.
Ooh,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go raclette, but I hold back the option to change my mind at any moment. But it will involve melty cheese.
Okay. If the mood so moves you, you may let us know. Haha, my favorite food has changed in this exact moment to something else. And
oh, I will.
Yeah. Just let us know. We're here. We'd like to hear all the food comments.
Perfect.
And so, Chris, why don't you just give the listeners just a very brief overview of like who you are, and then we'll get way more in detail when we get down to the main discussion.
Okay. So, yes, hello. I am Chris Rankin. And you will know me as Percy Weasley. I've been acting, performing, directing, producing, being sort of showbiz and stagey for 22 years of my life. I live in the beautiful part of the world called Wales in the United Kingdom, but I'm originally from New Zealand. So theoretically could also be a hobbit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't think I've met a real life hobbit before.
Well, and you still haven't. I'm far too tall and my feet are not hairy enough.
So that's why you are in England.
Yeah, exactly.
We can work on that. Don't worry. I know people. We can get you those hairy feet.
It's not my area of folklore expertise, okay. I must be honest.
Yeah. Is that Lord of the Rings, technically speaking?
Yeah.
Yeah. You wanted to know what I think that Gandalf lives in the Morag, which is the giant volcano that he lives in.
Okay.
I know nothing. Okay. That's Juliana's weird headcanon that she has about Lord of the Rings.
Juliana loves to make us Tolkien fans cringe with these theories. So,
Yeah. And I know that Orlando Bloom plays Orlando Bloom, essentially, in that movie.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Although I had an interesting realization the other day. Mm-hmm. I was talking to somebody who said, so Orlando Bloom plays Legolas in Lord of the Rings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who is an elf.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's a very beautiful elf, you know, long flowing hair, gorgeous skin, ears, you know, every teenage girl's poster boy from that time period was Legolas.
Like, oh, yeah.
People mm-hmm. swooned.
Mm-hmm.
Dobby is also an elf.
He is.
So are we like...
How do we get from Legolas
to Dobby?
Assuming that elves across folklore are essentially the same breed of creature, how does one get from that to that?
We have learned from a former guest and friend of the pod that there are different variations of elves. So,
okay. Well,
they are very different in appearance very often.
There we go.
We have those and those.
I don't know if you saw like the meme that was going around the last couple of days, Chris, of Snoop Dogg as Dobby.
Yes, I did see that, and it was
I loved that.
Quite disturbing.
I feel like that's like the middle ground though between Legolas and Dobby though. It goes Legolas, Snoop Dobby Dob.
Snoop Dobby. Yeah.
And Dobby. And then Dobby. That's kind of like the evolution, if you look at it.
Horrifying. Horrifying. If you have that diagram of like the sort of the evolution of man, you know, yeah, with the sort mm-hmm. of with the primate and then sort of slowly standing to upright, you go Dobby.
Snoop Dobby.
Dobby, something, 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 Snoop Dobby, Legolas.
Something, 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 Legolas, yeah.
Yeah.
And we cracked the code. There you go.
Yeah. There's merchandise in there. That's a t-shirt waiting to happen.
Oh, definitely.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, LeakyCon's only like 6, 7, 8 months away, whatever.
Oh, no, it's soon. It's soon.
Yeah, get on that.
7, 8 months, yeah.
Yeah, you got time to make shirts.
We just started to chat and our mind is already blown, so this is going to be a great episode.
Chris, thank you so much for that quick introduction. And
Yes, thank you.
No. Like you said, we love a dumb story. We love like a tangent. It's right on vibe with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So listeners, we're going to send you over into the news and we'll catch you on the flip side of that. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Excuse me, I thought we established on the last episode that this is the Juliana issue.
I almost went like, do, 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 do. I always have to think of Mario when you do this.
I feel like it's pretty close to Mario. It's like, I feel like that could be like my inspiration. Like, this is the news inspired by Mario Kart.
Excuse me. Go again.
News. News. Okay, listeners, welcome.
All right.
Welcome to the news, listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This week is brought to you by Mario Kart. I'm the wiener. No, not really. That'd be awesome if Mario Kart would sponsor us, because I am trying to get my hands on a Nintendo Switch so I can play Hogwarts Legacy when that comes around. But that's a conversation for another time. But, you know, Nintendo, hit us up.
Okay, yes. What's in the news?
Yeah, so our first portion of the news is just one, a big thank you to all of our patrons.
Yay! Yay!
And a big thank you to David of Crooked Wands.
Yay!
And an announcement that our December charity donation went to the victims of the Club Q shooting, and they are raising funds to provide resources and support for the survivors and also the victims of the families of the tragedy that happened here in the United States, unfortunately, on November 19th. And it's just such a sad thing. And
yeah,
it was a hate crime against the LGBTQIA community, and we can't stand behind that at all. And we want to make sure that the people who are involved with this, that we can support the families of those who have lost loved ones and those who are in the hospital too. So it's just a really sad thing, and we're glad that we can provide any kind of level of support for what has happened.
Yeah, it's honestly crazy that these things are still happening.
Yeah,
us helping at least in a small way, we're happy to do it. So thank you so much for everyone supporting, and for David, as every month, you are a lovely human being. We love you. Thank you for that.
And if you'd like to donate more, they have a GoFundMe page that you can go and donate to, the GoFundMe/victims of Club Q Colorado Springs mass shooting. Okay, and then the rest of our news is a little bit lighter, which is good. So first, we're starting off with something that is almost so light that it flies.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was a great transition, Juliana.
The thing that is flying away from us, because I personally am not buying this item, but it looks really cool, is the new Firebolt from Cinereplicas, and it is now on pre-order. It looks very nice. I don't even know where I would put this.
It looks amazing. I would love to have this above my shelves, but it costs $499.
That's too much money.
My God. But this is, it looks great.
It looks amazing. And it looks like a really cool piece to be able to show off. And I'm sure we'll have some friends who end up getting it. And if you end up purchasing it, let us know, is it worth the $500? That's kind of my question. Because I feel like some of the items we get from Noble Collection /Cinema Replicas/Warner Brothers, some of them are like really nice. And some of them are of questionable quality. So if you get it and you like it, let us know. And then the next thing on our list is that there is a new Chocolate Frog card that's coming out in Universal Mail. And I included this because this is a person who I thought would be interesting to our Hufflepuffs and our herbologists out there.
Mm-hmm.
The latest card honors the early herbologist Beaumont Marjorie Banks,
I think is what you would say. I'm guessing, but that's what I would say.
You're probably closer than I am.
Marjorie Banks.
Yes, and Marjorie Banks collected and classified many magical plants and flowers through his career, and he is officially credited with discovering gillyweed.
Ooh, okay. We know what gillyweed is, of course.
So, possibly a Hufflepuff. We don't know. Could have been.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Are we thinking too stereotypically?
Yeah, possibly. But if you'd like to collect this card, you can go to Universal Studios in Florida or in Los Angeles, California. And it is coming in a Chocolate Frog card box that has a golden sticker on it that identifies that it is the 2022 exclusive collector card. So you don't have to go buying random boxes, which is actually really nice.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bonus thing.
You know, that is honestly so nice to do, because I remember, like, many years ago, the first Chocolate Frogs that I bought, I had like 5 or 6 of them because I wanted to collect the cards. And I have no idea how many Gryffindor and Ravenclaw cards I have. It's just...
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, when we went to London, I bought 2 Chocolate Frogs. I bought a dark chocolate and a regular one. I got Dumbledore in both of them. I was like, oh boy, I bought 2 and I don't have any Chocolate Frog cards yet. I'm going to get 2 separate ones. Nope, I got 2 Dumbledores. I was like, okay, fine.
I don't have Dumbledore yet, so you can send one of those over if you want to.
Okay, I'll put it in your Christmas gift. Yeah, so if you end up getting this card, let us know. We'd love to see it. It looks like a really cool card.
Yeah, it does.
Also, when this episode comes out, friends, the coming weekend, the 10th and the 11th of December, you can join myself and our good friend Jeff over at Wizard Fest. You're giving me a face like I'm saying the wrong thing, Mel.
Yeah, this will have been over already because this is coming out on the 14th of December. So,
oops. Well, Jeff and I were just at WizardFest and we had a great time, I'm sure. So yeah. Look forward to hearing about that. And we're going to say thank you to everyone who joined us. I know Mela and Anu were coming out, so they're probably listening to this right now. So anyone who joined us, and welcome to any new listeners, because at this point, I will have handed out stickers, Mel, to multiple people at this point in time. Yes,
because Juliana was smart enough with the last batch that she ordered that she added all of our social information on the back of these stickers. So
yeah, so you can use the sticker and then you have information on how to listen to us or contact us. So
yeah.
We'll say that found that out on accident, how to do that, and don't regret it. So
I think in the next episode, we can talk a little bit about how the WizardFest was. We're going to do a bit of a recap of the year anyway. So
yeah, I'm definitely going to, as of right now, if you're listening to this in real time, listeners, when this comes out, I will have had some kind of recording of the panels that I did, probably live streams that will be saved to my personal Instagram.
Yeah, so go there and check it out.
Okay. And then just a nice little thing, because I know, Mel, you and I have had some like crazy weeks and month and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have a new Hogwarts Legacy ASMR video called A Calm Autumn Morning, which just sounds like sitting in a forest, which I thought would be something you might enjoy.
Yes.
And it says it is a new video that has the most calming and warm autumnal atmosphere, showcasing the seasonal wonder of Hogwarts Castle grounds and the neighboring areas. And I've left the link here, Mel, so you may go and enjoy some autumnal ASMR.
Okay. I do like to listen every now and then to different types of nature sounds. Mm-hmm. For meditation or yoga or something like that, or just to fall asleep too.
Yeah, I don't know what the difference between listening to a regular forest ASMR and the Hogwarts forest ASMR would be. Maybe some like screaming in the backgrounds from Dolores Umbridge, I'm unsure.
I would assume that in the video you will see some scenery as well. So I guess it's a whole package to look, something nice to look at as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and this is part of a series of ASMR videos that they have actually put out through the Hogwarts Legacy YouTube channel. So if you're looking for, I'm not sure if there's a Hufflepuff common room one. Yeah, I know. I think pretty sure there's a Gryffindor common room one.
Okay.
As of right now. Go check it out.
Yeah.
And then we just have one more little bit of news coming from the studio tour.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to be going to the studio tour in 2023, Discovering Hogwarts will be taking place between May 2nd and September 4th. And this promises to be a spectacular experience. It says that fans will travel back in time and relive some of the most iconic moments during Harry's first year in the Wizarding World. You can expect to rediscover the thrill of traveling across the Black Lake by boat, the wonders of the Great Hall, the anticipation of the sorting ceremony, the secrets of Gringotts, and the hustle and bustle of Diagon Alley. This is as close as you're going to get to experiencing what it's like to receive your Hogwarts letter and entering the Wizarding World for the first time. And the good news is you can book your tickets now if you'd like to experience that. There's not too many details on exactly how it would be different from just going through the studio tour already, but it sounds like they're going to like zhuzh up some things and make it a little bit more interactive when it comes to this.
Yeah, I would assume that if you remember when we went there now in the summer, it was the creature themed.
Yes. Yeah, we had Mandrakes and Mischief.
Yes. So I would assume that there will be small sections where you can do something specific. For example, we had this one spot where you could do this, where this photo op was, where you could sit at basically at the table of Hagrid. And
yeah, with Norbert,
and it would look like one person is giant and the others are smaller, so you are basically Hagrid and the others are Harry, Hermione, Ron, so that this is like themed, so maybe there is a sort of sorting hat ceremony even, you know, that would be kind of cool, maybe?
Yeah.
I would assume there is different photo ops that are themed that way, that you can sit in a boat and they film you or something and you can buy the picture later or the video, this kind of footage.
Probably.
Maybe some special props that are fitting to that and you can see close up.
Yeah, I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see what comes of it the closer it gets, because this is obviously a little bit far in advance.
I feel like I want to go.
I mean, you can.
Maybe next year I gotta go again.
Yeah. I know for a fact it was a press trip and Juliana does not have the money. Would I like to go? Yes. If someone decides that they want to fund that for me, I will go. Is that likely? No.
Okay, but that sounds really fun.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. And then we did have a little bit of feedback coming from our listeners. It comes from Michelle. Would you like to read that, Mel?
Yeah, I just wanted to close out the news with something cute that Michelle left us. We had said at some point that this is why we are Hufflepuffs and not Ravenclaws.
Yeah.
Michelle was saying, don't sell yourself short. You too can keep up with all the Ravenclaws. Excellent analysis of house traits as always, Michelle. So thank you for that. That was nice to hear. We can keep up with the Ravenclaws, Juliana.
Yeah, very smart. Very smart, yes. Over here.
So.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Eric Manweiler of Wood Thrush Wands. I make hand-carved wands inspired by the beauty and wonder of the natural world and our beloved Harry Potter universe. I love imagining how all of the life force and energies and magic of plants and animals enhance and shape the magic that goes into wands and cores. And if you're in the forest, how that might change the magic that you do and enhance it and strengthen it. I also really love the creative process of wands and the storytelling of it. You know, when you weather a wand and you give it sort of this used feeling, it tells a story about where that wand's been and how it's been used. You can find my wands on Instagram at WoodThrushWands.
So that brings us to the end of the news. And listeners, that brings you into a lovely interview with Mr. Chris Rankin himself, so enjoy! Well, listeners, welcome back from the news! Here we are in the main discussion, and we still have with us Mr. Chris Rankin. Go off on many crazy tangents, apparently, which is I'm all for.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm sleep deprived and excited to be talking to people. So
perfect time to have an interview.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think our best place to start is, where did you get introduced to Harry Potter first? And I guess part of my question is, was it part of your experience auditioning for the movies, or did you know Harry Potter before you even stepped foot into the studios?
I was a Harry Potter fan. Not like an OG. I started on Chamber of Secrets, book-wise.
That's where I started, too, actually. I actually didn't read Sorcerer's Stone until I was, like, in college. I grew up with the books. Like, I literally, like, was, like, 11 when Harry was 11.
Yeah. I think I probably... Maybe I was a little bit older than that. I can't quite remember.
Yeah, you can't be much older than...
I'm 39.
Okay, so you're closer to Mel.
But I read Chamber of Secrets first. And basically what happened was my mum was... She still is an English teacher, but she was an English teacher at the school that I went to. And come the summer holidays, the school librarian would basically send my mum home with a pile of books for me to read as like the test bunny to see what should be stocked in the school library. Mm-hmm. And Chamber of Secrets is one of those books. So we went on our annual little camping trip to the south of England. We took a pile of books and Chamber of Secrets was one of those. I read it literally cover to cover in one sitting, and then subsequently went back, read Philosopher's Stone, then Chamber of Secrets. And then not long after that, I suppose, I can't remember when Azkaban came out, but...
Yeah, it was like, those ones were like almost every year at a certain point.
Yeah.
The first big wait that I remember was Goblet of Fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think Azkaban must have come out that summer then, possibly. I can't remember. But yeah, so I'd have been kind of maybe 13 or 14, I think, at this time. Mm-hmm. Which was a couple of years, obviously, before the film started being made.
Yeah.
But yeah, I read the books. I liked them. Like, at that time, that was kind of all you could be, really, when it came to being a Harry Potter fan. It was like, oh yeah, they're good books. Mm-hmm. I'll read the next one. You know, there wasn't merchandise, there wasn't midnight book releases, there wasn't any of the sort of shenanigans that there is these days. It was just a series of kids' books that kept coming out. And if you liked them, you got the next one and you read it. Yeah. And then obviously a couple of years later, they started to work on the prep for the film. And yeah, I mean, I've told the audition story about 3 million times, but the short version of it is that I saw an advert on the television where they were basically looking for kids to... send in an application to audition for, realistically, they were looking for Ron, Harry and Hermione.
Yeah.
That's what they were looking for through this. It was aimed at 10 and 11 year old children. I happened to see it and happened to think that I kind of ticked all the right boxes for Percy. Because, you know, for a start, I was really into acting at this point. I'd got super hooked on being in the plays at school and the musicals, and I was in the local community theater group.
Oh, do you have a favorite role that you played as like a kid, like in community theater? Because community theater is a wild ride.
Yeah, community theater is amazing. I run a community theater company now in the town I live in.
Oh, that's so nice. It's
like, I love it. I love it. I had some really good ones. I played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. That was quite fun.
Oh, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We did Grease. We did Return to the Forbidden Planet. We did Little Shop of Horrors. My school took musical theatre very seriously because when I was 13, I guess, we did Little Shop of Horrors.
Wow.
I was in the chorus.
Yeah.
And I played, and because it was, you know, it was a school show, so there was like 400 kids in it.
Yeah.
I don't know, like 35, 40, something like that. But I was in the chorus, and then I had like a couple of little bits. So like I got to sing one line in Closed for Renovation, and then I was Bernstein in The Meek Shall Inherit. I'm getting very niche at this point in time. So if you haven't seen Little Shop of Horrors, this means nothing to you.
Trust me, I love Little Shop of Horrors. Like you're talking, I'm someone who, Mel knows, I love musical theater.
Mm. Oh, good. Yeah. We will be fine then.
Yes.
My high school, this was the point I was getting to. My high school, we took that school show on tour to mainland Europe.
Wow.
We got on a bus, we put the set on a truck, and we went to like the schools that we were linked to in the Netherlands and Germany and Paris, which is pretty damn cool.
Yeah.
For a school to, it was pretty awesome. Yeah, but we did some really cool stuff. And then, yeah, we did Honk at my community theatre. I loved that. Yeah, we did some pretty cool ones. Some that you wouldn't ever get away with doing now in a...
Oh, that's so exciting.
You know, like The King and I. Wonderful musical, but you can't do that with 40 white kids anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, no. What you could do in the mid-90s, you look back and go...
Probably not. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the stuff just doesn't check out well.
Yeah, no. In hindsight, maybe we shouldn't be doing that. And now we're not, so that's good. Yeah, so that's my kind of thing. And then in the middle of all of this, I'd seen this advert on the TV, and I thought, well, look, I am 16 years old. I am a school prefect at school, because that is a real thing in the UK, mm-hmm. and I know that that absolutely baffles Americans, that school prefects are actual things.
It's so wild.
Yeah.
The format that we have for American schools would not be conducive to that in any capacity. To think, like, that your format of school that you attended, it was so vastly different than the American style. Yeah. It's just like mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. I mean, Hogwarts is like such a different experience, obviously being a magic school, but that's very much sort of the private boarding school situation. I mean, normal schools, even in the UK, are just totally foreign to what you guys have out in the States. I don't know about Finland, have to say. Yeah, the schooling system in the UK is still weirdly old-fashioned, I think. We still wear school uniforms and...
Yeah, we don't have that really here in Finland, yeah. I think, either. I am not originally from Finland. I'm originally from Germany.
Oh, okay.
What we do have is like class presidents, you know, that go to meetings at school, and then you discuss in the interest of your own class.
Yeah, like prom committee, and just get to do what, whatever.
Yeah, I think prefects essentially in the real world, they're basically kind of ambassadors. You kind of, it's something you're rewarded for being a good student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who doesn't get into trouble and is a good role model for people. Unlike Percy, who takes it like some kind of dictatorship. You know, it's like, yeah, but I was 16, I was ginger, and I was a school prefect, and I was like, well, if they're looking for people to be in Harry Potter,
it's me.
That's the one that I'm going to get.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get any role in this film, and I didn't really understand that it was a really big deal. Like, it hadn't occurred to me that a Harry Potter film would be anything really much more than what I'd been doing at my local youth group. Do you know what I mean? It was sort of the comprehension of how you make a multi-million dollar Hollywood movie just didn't figure into it.
You're just like, it's another audition for my community theater. Here I am, Percy Weasley.
It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity. And look, I was like, if I could get any part, this is the one that I would be most likely to get because I already ticked the boxes. I'm not going to get Harry. I'm not going to get Ron. Definitely not going to get Hermione. Yeah, so it was Percy.
That's a very Ravenclaw move too, as well, to just know exactly, like, in a very calculated way.
Logic.
Exactly what role you should go for.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like being like realistic with yourself.
Realistic and logical. Mm-hmm. How do you get to the best result? Yes. And yeah, and that was the short version of it. I wrote a letter and then about 4 months later, they rang me back after I'd forgotten about it. And then they rang me back. And then the next day I had to go to London for an audition. And then I went for another audition about 3 days after that. And I started the next week.
Oh,
so,
wow.
When it happened really quickly.
Yeah.
At what point did you realize that this is a greater deal than you thought it would be?
Honestly, probably the premiere for the first movie.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, obviously, a lot of stuff happened in the year between that, because in that year we were doing ridiculous things like filming with very famous actors off the television. You know, like that is still quite an unusual thing. But I think because of the way they made the films and because of the way we were treated as young people, it never felt like it was this big deal.
Yeah.
Like, it was still really super cool. And, like, you were still like, oh my God, that's Alan Rickman over there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Julie Walters turns up, who's playing your mum, and that's really cool. But at no point did it ever kind of register that this was going to be something that literally everybody in the world would know about. Because we were all just, basically, we were all locked away at Leavesden Studios for a year. It was such a secretive, insular process of making that film that, like, the outside world didn't know, especially on the first one. It was all new.
Yeah.
So nobody really knew what we were doing. Nobody was allowed to see what we were doing. We weren't allowed to talk about what we were doing. So until that first film came out, it was just, like, playing, really, I guess.
Yeah.
Those should have been clues already, though, to you that this is probably a really huge deal if it comes out.
Yeah, but they were, I think...
Or is this a usual thing?
They can't, I don't know. I think in hindsight, that should have probably clocked. But I was at this weird age. So I was 16. I turned 17 about 3 weeks into filming. Mm-hmm. But if you're under 16... you're treated as a child. The minute you turn 16, you become legally an adult. Mm. So I was playing a child, but being treated as an adult.
Oh, that's confusing.
Which was odd, because I was talking to somebody relatively recently about this. I can't remember who it was now. It was Flick Miles, who Emma Watson's double.
Does the Beyond the Wand podcast.
That's Beyond the Wand podcast, yeah. And because obviously, like, she was 11, I think, when they started.
Mm-hmm.
But to some degree, like, because I'd never been in a film before, and none of them had been in a film before, so even though I was like 6 years older than them, we were all kind of brought down to the same level because we were all having to learn this process together. And so it was weird. I didn't really, it just never really occurred to me that at the end of this we'd all be on a red carpet in the middle of London with literally thousands of people screaming at us and signing autographs, and literally it hadn't even crossed my mind that 22 and a bit years later I'd be here doing this with you guys. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you were a kid and you just weren't as a kid you don't think like that far in advance. You're not
I just wanted to act.
Yeah.
And this was an opportunity to do it and get some money for it. You know, mm-hmm. it was a fun way to not be in school.
So after this first movie came out, how has life changed for you? How quickly did you notice the differences that people recognize you?
I mean, it's a bit of a funny one because I would say I've been quite lucky in that Percy is a big enough character that everybody can go, oh yeah, I know who Percy mm-hmm. is. But he's not a big enough character that people like point and stare in the street. That's never really happened for me. It happens occasionally. Don't get me wrong. You know, wherever you go in the world, there are Harry Potter fans. And I have been literally stopped in the middle of in Times Square in New York by somebody who's just seen me walking down the street and gone, that's Percy Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't happen very often. Obviously less and less now because I'm becoming decrepit and look less like I did when I was, you know, I don't look like I did when I was 16 anymore, which is a blessing. But yeah, I think I had in some ways the best of both worlds in that respect, in that I could go to work and do this incredible, you know, this incredible job and be involved in this incredible project and then get by without having all the hassle that certainly the main three did and the twins, I'm sure, did because they're twins, you know, and Tom and people like that, they're instantly recognizable. Whereas I always found that you'd have to go, that over there, that guy there, he played Percy. And then people go, oh yeah. You know, but that being said, I grew up in a very small town where I was the only interesting thing that seemed to have happened for quite a long time. So literally every week there'd be something in the paper, Harry Potter, local Harry Potter star does, you know.
You were the sensation of the streets.
I was the talk of the town, yes. Yeah, I mean, that was nice, you know.
Yeah.
It's nice to that everyone's excited for you, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it did get a little bit, occasionally you'd be like, oh, gosh.
Like, leave me alone.
I just want to buy some bread.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Oh.
I was lucky, I think, in that respect. But, oh, what was I going to say? But how did it change my life, I think you said, Melanie, didn't you? And I don't know is the simple answer. Mm-hmm. I don't really know, because I was at an age where, like, I was getting to that point where I was starting to have to make decisions about what my life was going to be. Was I going to go to university to study drama? Was I don't know what I was going to do. I knew it was probably something stagey, because that's what I love the most, and performing and music and things like that. But yeah, I mean, realistically, most people aren't lucky enough to be able to make a living out of doing things like that. So I think it gave me the opportunity to do that as my job for, you know, all of my life, really, so far.
Yeah.
That maybe I wouldn't have had. I don't know. Hard to say. It's such an interesting point to have started something like that. But honestly, it opens doors that wouldn't necessarily get opened if you didn't have Harry Potter on the top of your resume, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. What's the craziest fan interaction you think you've had? And obviously, we don't have to name names or anything. We know. It's Juliana and Mel's friend, the X, Y, and Z, who's...
I don't know. Actually, I think I've been quite lucky. I don't think I've not had anything scary crazy.
Oh, that's good. That's a start.
Yeah. Wherever you go, whatever you do, there are always people who don't understand boundaries and sometimes need to have boundaries explained to them that, you know,
back away.
There is a point at which this is just two people having a conversation. Because we have talked and had a photo together, we are not friends. We're just people who've met and talked and now we go. But like 999 times out of 1,000, it's brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a big supporter and a big believer in the Harry Potter fan community, because I think it brings people together. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing this concert, and I've been doing this concert for a year now. it's still going. At the end of the show, I talk a bit about the thing for me that I love about Harry Potter, and the reason that I sort of believe so much in this fan community, is that you can go anywhere in the world and you can go a lot. You can walk as a complete stranger into country on your own, stand in the middle of the street and go, does anybody here like Harry Potter? And somebody will go, yes. And you've immediately got a friend.
Yeah.
That's what I think is wonderful about it, you know, is this international sort of, it's like a sort of secret society in a way.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. That's something I've definitely discovered over the last like year or so, because I've been traveling around and stuff, even for like non-Harry Potter fan related things. But like everywhere I go, like I have like a little group of friends that I can meet up with, and people who just want to go do things, or if there's something like your concert, or I'm going down to Georgia to see the exhibition that they have down there.
Mm-hmm.
I already have like a ton of people who are like, oh, I'll join you. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. And so you have like a little pod of Potter people walking around. And
yeah, you know what, you always know that if you've got, you know, your little social media circle of friends, mm-hmm. or whatever, you can always tweet out or something and go, you know, hey, I'm in Louisiana today, mm-hmm. If anybody fancies hanging out.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be somebody who'll be like, yes, probably a Hufflepuff, to be honest. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Let's face that. But yeah, like, I'll come for coffee. Yes.
I bring the cake.
Cookies? I'm there. Oh, I love it. I just love how much, because Mel and I, obviously, we're part of the fandom, and we're very big supporters of, we are here for the fandom. Like, again, we love the books, we love the movies, but it's really the community that makes this such a gem and such a golden, wonderful place to be. And it's so nice to see someone like yourself who, I will say, you're a big part in the Harry Potter fandom. You're someone who is in the movies. You are someone who, again, not everyone is like immediately recognizing you, but we all know who you are. And it's so nice to see someone of that status, I guess, who is just so active with the fan community, because we like to include everyone. And it's just so nice to have someone who sees exactly what we see in the community, someone who sees like how wonderful it is.
About the same time that I suppose it was just before I got into Potter, professionally got into Potter, but I joined an online forum.
Ooh.
for Harry Potter fans called the Unofficial Harry Potter Movie Site or something. It was like a sort of a fan group.
Yeah.
And this was early days of the internet, you know, this was sort of 1999, I suppose, early 2000. So back in the days where it was perfectly reasonable to have people you'd never met on your MSN Messenger list, you know, like people you'd never met. You know, some of them I'm still very much in contact with, and they're real life friends. You know, because of a connection that we made through being fans of Harry Potter and being interested in what was going on in the Potter community. Yeah, so I think perhaps that's where I've got something of a more unique understanding of the fan community than other people might have, is because, you know, and I know if Anna was very involved as a Harry Potter fan pre-becoming Luna, I was part of that right in the very early days, and I met amazing people through it. So I think, yeah, it means a lot to me, and I've seen the good that it does and continues to do. So yeah, hopefully it will continue to do good.
Yeah.
In fact, I know it's continuing to do good, so it will.
I have the feeling that whatever happens revolving around Harry Potter and everything, we all stick together no matter what.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think that's what makes our fandom so special.
Yeah, I think that's entirely true. And I think, you know, having done LeakyCon many times and twice this year.
Yeah.
And I love it. But what's lovely is that it's kind of like, it's almost, you know, obviously we're all there for a sort of, for Harry Potter, but it becomes a little bit like the algorithm, these conventions and these meetups. You go, well, we all like Harry Potter, but have you tried this? You know, and you have these sort of opportunities to go, okay, so this is what brought us all together, but now let's start to pick at what else kind of fits into that. Yeah. It's like, you know, when you finish a season of something on Netflix, and it's like, right, you finish watching The Crown, you might like Downton Abbey, you know.
British Bake Off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's probably where the future goes, you know, is that we start to kind of spread our wings and look at, you know, well, we do already, don't we? You know,
it's yeah.
this Venn diagram of fandoms, you know, you've got Harry Potter over here, Tolkien, you know, the Percy Jackson stuff, Twilight came and probably went by now. Gotta love it.
My favorite. It's my favorite thing to love to hate. Like, I will hate read Twilight any day of the week.
And you know, I kind of love Twilight, but yeah. you kind of can't not go, oh, but it's such a,
it's so terrible, but it's just like so good at the same time. It's
yeah it's easy, you know what you're getting.
Yep. I love it. Yeah, it's, I agree with you too. It's so nice to see the fandom coming together, and also, like you said, like having these little pockets. I know, especially like at LeakyCon, that's a good example of all the different pockets people can fall into, like Wizard Rock, Fanfic, or things like that, or even like the podcasting side of things, where it's a little bit more performative, or the people who do all the different types of art that you get to see. That's just it's so cool to see how this one thing has like not only brought us together, but then sparked this like flame of creativity in so many people.
It's become greater than its original sort of, there's a saying, I cannot think what it is, but it's like it's bigger than the sum of its parts or something. Yeah. You know, there's like what it is and what it has become are the same, but yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
I think you know what I mean.
the whole is bigger than the sum of its parts individually, or something like that. Like
something like that.
The whole is worth more than the individual parts alone. I don't know, something along those lines.
It's that kind of, we're Harry Potter fans, but or and. Mm-hmm. It's the yes and thing, isn't it? Like, you know.
Yeah,
the Potter community just being such a force of love and acceptance, especially with she who shall not be named, who is the author. Even though that is what she is choosing to do with her life, the Harry Potter community, I like to think of, is we're all like little variations of Harry. We're all like kind of quirky, eccentric kids that kind of felt lost at one point in time. And then we have now found our people in the Harry Potter community.
Yeah, it's that, you know, it's another thing I say in the concert. Hogwarts, it says, will always be home to anyone who needs it.
Yeah.
And we've created our own Hogwarts.
Yeah, it's so nice.
And that's wonderful. And I hope that long may it continue in some form or other.
Yeah.
I think it will.
I think so. We don't plan on stopping this podcast anytime soon. And
jolly good.
It doesn't sound like you plan on stopping anytime soon either. You got plenty of stuff on your calendar, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I plan to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the concert that you're doing right now? Because Mel got to see it, but I haven't gotten to see it. And I don't know if you're coming to the United States with it at all.
I have no idea. Okay. I would love to, but I think that sounds like a very complicated process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, there's visas involved and all that. Yeah. It's complicated. So it's called The Magical Music of Harry Potter, Live in Concert. It's entirely independent. It has nothing to do with any of the important stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Warner Brothers. It's not Bloomsbury, it's not Scholastic, anything like that. It's it's entirely independent. It's a producer in Germany who has been producing concerts for years. I'm doing a Harry Potter show, but at the same time, they're touring. So the nights that I'm not doing Harry Potter, there's also a Lord of the Rings music concert.
Oh.
Another one as well, I think, that goes out. So it's something they do. They do concerts of music from movies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so it was supposed to start late 2020, and obviously that just kind of pushed and pushed. And pushed, yeah. And we eventually started last November, and it's been going very, very well. So it's a 70-piece orchestra and choir on the stage who perform bits from the Harry Potter soundtrack. So all the stuff you'd expect, you know, your Hedwig's themes, your Harry's Wondrous Worlds, your Quidditch marches, your Wizards, Wands and Wheezes and things. And I can't remember what they call that. Buckbeak and Hogwarts. Yeah, it's all the stuff you'd expect to hear, and some of the stuff that you probably didn't necessarily notice if you don't exclusively listen to soundtracks. And then in between the bits of music, I come on and I talk about what wonderful things music does to enhance the film experience and also tell stories about silly things that happened when we were filming and how certain magical things were done and things like that. And it's going really well. I think I've done 100 and something performances of it now.
Wow.
Over the last year. Yeah. All across Europe.
I saw the concert here in Turku in Finland last year in November. So it's a year ago now.
Yeah.
And it was so much more than I expected it would be. I knew that you would be there to moderate it, but I had no clue what exactly would be happening and how this program would look like. It was so wonderful. You have no idea. I was lucky enough, I was sitting in the first row, you were like standing right there, and it was so...
Oh god, you probably got spat on. I'm a bit of a Jonathan Groff. I've got
It just made the experience even more special, because you see someone presenting this so wonderfully. You did such a great job. You have this way about yourself to really connect with the people, even though it's a huge audience, you know? You made us all feel like it's such a special evening. So you did really, really well.
Thank you.
Just hearing the music by itself alone is already like, it makes you tear up every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just so wonderful to hear this live and to have then you presenting it also and giving us these stories, involving us, asking us questions and taking our answers in. And it was just such a fun evening. And of course, the brilliant ending of you performing two songs and Do the Hippogriff is absolutely amazing. We were losing, all of us were losing our mind. I mean, at that time, it was still quite uncertain if the concerts would even happen.
Yeah.
Luckily, it was not cancelled. I remember lots of concerts in Germany were cancelled at the time, I think.
We had, I mean, all the way up until March this year, we had shows postponed.
Yeah.
And it's still, like, I'm still doing shows now. We did some in, we were in Germany last week, and some of the, I do a meet and greet after the show, which I probably didn't do in Finland so much because COVID was much more of a thing this time last year. Now I'm going out to the front after the show and doing selfies and signing stuff and things. But, you know, people bring their tickets and you can see on their ticket, it's like originally on this date, then rescheduled to this date and then this date and now it's here. So we're getting there. We're mopping them up very slowly. But thank you, Melanie. That's lovely to, like, it's probably changed. I'd be interested to know what you think of, if you got to see it again now, it would be interesting to see how different it is, because I think, I mean, it's the same show, but...
Yeah, yeah. Is it still the same outfit? Because I think to remember that I kept seeing concert photos of different places and you would always have this same...
It is still the same outfit, yes.
So how many shirts of that did you have, or was it always the same one?
Oh no, it was the same one. That t-shirt is going in the trash at the end of this week because I've literally worn it to death. but I'm quite superstitious about things. So I'm like, this works.
Uh-huh.
This is what I'm going to wear now, forever. so yeah, I had to buy some new red and white striped t-shirts this week. Because, okay. Yeah, that t-shirt, which was one of, it was a Cherry Wallace t-shirt, actually.
Oh, nice.
Harry Potter YouTuber.
Oh, we know her.
One of her ordinary out. Yeah, it was one of Cherry's t-shirts.
Yeah.
But it's dying at this point. It is very dead.
Time to move on.
I think it will probably do a couple of shows this week, and then I think it's time for it to die, and we'll work out what I do next. But yeah, I think it's a very different show. It's the same show. It's a different orchestra now.
Yeah.
We've got a wonderful orchestra from Ukraine that we're working with since the summer, and they are fabulous. They are so lovely. And I think that, I mean, the show is the same, the structure's the same, but I think it's kind of very slightly different. I'd be interested to look back on a show I did last year and see how much what I do has moved or changed or things like that.
What I could definitely tell is that you had, I think, a special connection with Darius and Johnny and everyone who was playing the live songs with you together.
Yeah, my little rock band group, yeah.
I've gotten to know them a little bit.
They are so sweet.
Yeah, it was so fun to see you guys together rocking out, and this stage was just like exploding with your energy. It was so great.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to see again, yeah.
Yes, yeah, I do. I miss Johnny and Darius and Vlad, my little band, my little Romanian band. They were so lovely. And I'm hoping somewhere in the back of my brain there's like some kind of plan, something. I'm like, I need to work out what this plan is, but I want to do something else with them.
Yeah, or you should.
At some point.
Yeah.
But we'll work on that. What was I going to say? No, doing the hippogriff.
Mm-hmm.
When that was first discussed, and I was like, I don't know that I can do that. I'm not sure that that's my thing. And then they're like, well, we don't have anybody else to sing it, so try it, see what happens.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I'll give it a go. And I was like, oh, actually, this is really fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, getting to rock out with a band and getting to sing a ballad, you know, I sing Magic Works,
the other song
from the Yule Ball, and getting to sing with an orchestra is like, it's a dream, honestly. It's a dream. It's something I never thought I'd get to do, you know, stand on concert hall stages in front of 2,000 people and sing with an orchestra. That's nuts. That doesn't happen in real life. I get to do it every night at the moment. It's wonderful.
But that was wonderful too.
Thank you. But yeah, hopefully we'll make it back up to... Well, I'm back in Scandinavia again over Christmas, I think, but not as far as Finland. I think we're doing... I've got 3 dates in Denmark and Sweden, so...
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to that because I love Scandinavia.
Yeah, it's beautiful up here.
It's such a chilled out, relaxed, beautiful part of the world. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, will you be taking your hippogriff, Dance the Hippogriff song anywhere else? I know we had some questions after Mel reviewed your show, if you were going to bring that to any United States locations, i.e. LeakyCon, possibly.
Well, I maybe one day. But,
okay, listeners.
I was going to, I did a cabaret show at Leaky this year.
Oh, nice.
Which is not something I've done before, but it was me talking about my life and about Harry Potter, and then I just threw some show tunes in, because why the heck not?
Yeah, there's always a show tune for every mood that you might have.
A show tune for everything.
Everything.
And I was going to do the hippogriff there, but for a start, there is no backing track for it. I discovered.
Oh,
there's
okay.
No karaoke track.
Are you listening, Jeff? Would you like to make a backing track for Do the Hippogriff?
Yeah, and then it's a bit weird doing the hippogriff to a karaoke track at 2 o'clock in the afternoon is a bit much.
Yeah.
So doing it live with a band at 10 o'clock at night at the end of a show. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's all the lights and everything. Oh, yeah.
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 2 o'clock in the afternoon in a conference center is a bit like...
different. It's a different vibe, you know?
Definitely a different vibe. But maybe, who knows? Maybe in Chicago, I'll find a wizard rock band. You know, maybe Draco and the Malfoys, maybe Jeff, maybe all of them together.
This has to happen now.
Harry and the Potters. Maybe we can create some kind of like mega band and do it.
I hear what you're saying, Chris, and I can hear Jeff listening to this. He's literally going to be like scheming, texting multiple people all at once, being like, this is what's going to happen. I would kind of plan on doing that if I were you, because it's probably going to happen. You put it into the ether already.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that.
Yeah, you ask for it, you shall receive. But yeah, so besides LeakyCon, like, what else do you have planned? Obviously, some more of the shows, hopefully. Do you have anything else planned for the next year?
Not too much. So I'm working on the concert until early New Year sometime. Not entirely sure exactly when I'm going to finish with it yet, but it'll be sort of March kind of time. Mm-hmm. I'd probably come back to it again at some point, but I need some time at home.
Mm-hmm. I've spent, don't blame you,
a lot of time away, and it's wonderful. The concert is wonderful, but the schedule is killer. Because we're doing, you know, we do one night here and then we travel to somewhere else, yeah, and do another night. And literally, you know, we're traveling sometimes 10 hours during the day, then doing a show, then sleeping, then traveling another 10 hours and doing, yeah, another show. So it can be a lot.
Yeah, that's exhausting.
And I haven't seen my fiance most of this year because I've been in Germany. but yeah, so I think a little bit of time at home. My community theatre group are doing Return to the Forbidden Planet in June, which I think, okay, I'm going to direct. So I'm kind of trying to hope to hang around and spend a bit of time working on that, because
yeah,
it'd be quite nice to. I'd love to do that. I love that show, and it's about time that I put a bit more effort into that company because I've been away for such a long time this year. And then, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what the year brings. Maybe it might be pantomime time, maybe for Christmas next year. Which is a very specifically British thing that I probably now need to explain.
Please, mm-hmm, yeah, I was just going to say, I'm not really sure exactly what pantomime is. Yeah, please explain.
Okay, pantomime is basically, specifically musical theatre for families performed at Christmas, only at Christmas, in the UK.
There seems to be a lot of, like, specifics around this.
Yeah, it's tradition. It goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, but panto in its kind of current form has been around probably since music hall kind of times, so sort of late 1800s, essentially. They're always based on one of the famous fairy tales. So you're talking your Snow White, your Cinderella, Jack and the Beanstalk, Little Red Riding Hood, mm-hmm, Aladdin, which is not necessarily one of your famous fairy tales, but, you know, all of those kind of, the ones that did, the Disney ones,
yeah, yeah, mm-hmm,
essentially, yeah, but pre-Disney. And it's a musical aimed at families, generally with pop music or current music thrown in. So it's not an original, it's never an original score. It's always kind of current music. Silly jokes, little sketch scenes and slapstick scenes, and there's a lot of tradition involved in it that I could talk to you for hours about because it's fascinating and really interesting, but it's such a British thing, such a British thing. I love doing it. It's another one of these sort of fabulous things that I absolutely love it.
That sounds exactly what I would like to do.
There's a lot of tradition involved. There's a lot of audience participation, so, you know, you always boo for the baddie, you always have to, there's a whole thing called the ghost gag where there's always a scene where everyone's having to try and run away from the ghost and the audience are shouting, the ghost's behind you, he's behind you. Yeah, there's lots of sort of weird traditions that I know absolutely baffle people who didn't grow up going to pantomimes at Christmas, and they're just like, what the?
It sounds lovely.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It is wonderful, and it's one of those things, pretty much every theatre across the country will have some pantomime of some description, whether it's a professional one or like just a community theatre doing one or something. It's everywhere. And like the big theatres in like sort of regionally around the towns that would normally have the touring musicals, they'll have a big pantomime that's got three or four celebrities from the television, you know, mm-hmm, somebody off mm-hmm a soap opera or somebody who was, you know, on Big Brother or something like that.
Oh yeah.
And then you've got ones, my favourite one is in the city of York, and it's been the same people doing it since I was like 3 or 4 years old, and they've been there every single year. None of them are particularly famous, apart from the fact they're famous for being the stars of York pantomime. So, but
I feel like that's such a niche thing. It's like when I went to a Ren Fair, and there's these guys who, they do a mud pit show, and like that is their job.
Oh, okay.
It's yeah, just as wild. Imagine the most wild thing you can think of and multiply that by 10. And it's one of those jobs, okay, where you're like, how did you even discover this was the job? Like, how did you even, yeah, find out you could get paid for this?
Well, you know, if you can make money doing it, don't complain. That's what I say. It's like that guy on TikTok that does the songs with the whip.
Oh yeah. Like, oh yeah. No, he's yeah.
He's a Ren Fair guy.
Oh, okay, well, he actually was at the one that I was at. Yeah, that's John Pierre, or like Ra the Whipper or something like that. Jacques the Whipper. That's who he is. Yeah, he comes to King Richard's Fair, which is the one that's right like half an hour from where I live.
You see, I wish we had Ren Fairs in the UK. We don't. It feels like it should be something that the UK would be really into, but for I suppose because we have the actual history, we're just like,
yeah, we just do fake history here.
Yeah.
Well, you're more than welcome to come next year if you like.
I would love, and I know my other half, Ness, would be like, we've talked about this. We're like, we need to be in America around a Ren Fair time and go to a Ren Fair. Because we've got loads of friends who go to Ren Fairs and are very involved in Ren Fair. And I'm like, I feel like we would be down with this.
One thing we have forgotten to ask is, do you have any silly stories from set while you were filming Harry Potter that you would like to share with us?
Oh, probably. I tell a lot of that. I'm going to do the naughty thing first and go, well, if you live in Germany or Northern Europe, I tell a lot of these silly stories in the concert. So come and see that. And just Google magical music of Harry Potter live in concert and it will come up with dates. Yeah. They're all over the blooming place. And
definitely go. It's so worth it.
It's a good show, if I do say so. I'm trying to think of one. Okay, random one, but I do enjoy telling it, is the Halloween scene in Philosopher's Stone with Quirrell coming running in. We're all there eating the sweets, drinking the butterbeer and stuff, and Quirrell comes in going, "Trial of the Dungeon!" And everyone, I'm sure, can recall Rupert Grint's face in that scene. Like, he does this, like, scared, like, almost Home Alone scared, you know, almost like the Macaulay Culkin, Munch's scream kind of thing. But that scene, it makes me laugh every single time because nobody is acting in that scene. None of us. All those reactions of us going, are all real because Chris Columbus didn't tell us what was going to happen. That was one of the brilliant things early on Potter, and one of the reasons that I think Chris Columbus was such a wonderful director on the earlier films was, you know, we had a load of kids who, when you ask kids to act, you don't necessarily get the most naturalistic performance. You get sort of, oh, I'm going to pretend to be scared. You know, Chris would film everything from every angle possible so that at all opportunities, you were getting everything you could possibly get to try and cut together something that would create a film that worked. And also because we had so little time on set with children that, you know, you have to try and get as many angles at once. Normally, when you're on a film, you've got maybe two cameras running at once. On the first two Potter films, you'd have maybe six going at a time. Like, there'd be close-ups everywhere, and you'd have a close-up on Dan, and if you were sitting next to Rupert, you'd have a close-up on Dan, you'd have a two-shot on Dan and Rupert, you'd have a close-up on Rupert, you'd have another angle coming in to get whoever they were talking to all at the same time, and normally you do all that separately. The thing that Chris was brilliant at was getting natural reactions out of us and out of the kids especially. So we didn't know that Quirrell was going to come in screaming and shouting. We didn't actually know that we were filming when he did it either. We were all just sat there nattering, chatting away and waiting. Like, we thought we were just waiting for the cameras to be reloaded or something. And then secretly pressed record. And then that happened. So all those reactions of everyone going, like, sort of jumping and turning around to see what the noise is, they're all real. That's our natural reaction to it. And it just, honestly, it makes, like, when you know that, you go back and you look at it and you're like, oh, yeah. Like,
that's great.
I don't know.
We love these kind of stories because it gives us a whole new view on what happens behind the scenes. And when you watch the movies, you will have these things in your mind now. And you'll think, okay, this and this happened at that time. It's really great.
It's one thing I wish we had that we don't is director's commentaries. I wish we did, because, you know, I remember it, but it's starting to get to the point where I'm starting to remember it the way I tell the stories, which might not necessarily, you know, like, you tell stories, you know, it's Chinese whispers, isn't it? Every time I tell the story, change it a little bit so that it's funnier for an audience, or, you know, like, it adapts over time and it evolves. And I think, you know, do I actually remember it all exactly as I'm telling people I do? Or, you know, have I put two memories together somehow? And, you know, and I know, for instance, in, you know, some of the things I talk about in the concert, just because of the amount of time we have and the way that the concert has to fit together, there are things that I tell in there that are true, but they didn't necessarily happen in that scene or in that order. So there's bits, like, I talk about how many meals we had to eat every day when we're eating food, because if you eat everything on your plate, for continuity, you have to eat everything on your plate every single take.
Yeah.
Which is why you never see actors eating in films. They always have something on their fork, but it very rarely gets to their mouth. I talk about that happening in the Great Hall because that's a good point for the story that I'm telling, and there's a good point in the concert, but that happened in the Burrow scene in the Weasleys in real life, you know, so, like, but we don't do anything about the Burrow in the concert, so
It's a little bit true.
It's all true. It's just not necessarily in the exact order that it happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I would love to get a director's comment, especially for the earlier films now, because there's so much that I just didn't understand when I was younger as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't really have an understanding of what everybody else was doing in the early days. I just sort of come along and tell the first years to hurry up and follow me and then go home again, really, you know. But
yeah,
when I think back, I'm like, oh my God, but you know, there's like
so many other things happening.
And so many other things that have to be taken into consideration. And like, you know, you wonder about things like why did Peeves get cut? You know, and
oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you get to see the filming of that or have any?
I never saw him filming, but there was a whole scene in the middle. So the Percy taking the Gryffindors to the common room bit, mm-hmm. you know, the famous Percy scene. There was a whole section in there where you meet Peeves the Poltergeist just before you get to the fat lady's portrait.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
As is in the book, you know, and he's throwing walking sticks and table and tennis balls and things at them. And we filmed it. And Rick Mayall, who was cast as Peeves the Poltergeist, who is like one of my favorite comedians, one of my favorite comic actors ever, sadly another one of the Potter alumni who is no longer with us and is off in the magical world in the sky, but he was so much fun. And it was very rare when we were filming that you would have, if for instance you had something that wasn't there in real life, say for instance a ghost or a sorting hat or a fat lady's portrait, for example. So John Cleese, who plays Nearly Headless Nick, I have lines of dialogue with John Cleese. I have not even seen him, let alone spoken to him. Never saw him.
That's the wildest thing to me. Like, I've been part of like stage productions, but never like a movie production.
Yeah.
And so to me that you've never met some of these other people who are in mm-hmm. the same movie as you, it's just like a wild thought to me.
Never met Elizabeth Spriggs, who played the fat lady, original fat lady. Never met her. Never met Leslie Phillips, who played the sorting hat. We had a guy who worked, certainly on the first film, I can't remember if he worked on any others, a guy called Les Bubb, who I remember watching on like children's television when I was younger. He was sort of like a kid's entertainer, did silly voices and sort of mime stuff and things. But he came and did silly voices off camera. So he did the voice when we were filming for Nearly Headless Nick. He did the sorting hat, things like that. So he was always, it was his voice until later on in the filming.
Mm-hmm.
But with Rick Mayall and Peeves, Rick Mayall came to Gloucester Cathedral where we filmed that scene and stood behind the camera, because Rick Mayall is such a unique human being, and his comedy and what he would have brought to Peeves was such a sort of trademark. Mm-hmm. Nobody else could have done it. There's lots of talk that the reason that Peeves was cut from the films was, you know, budgetary and time related. I genuinely think a lot of it was just because they couldn't get a straight take from us, because we were all just wetting ourselves.
That was going to be my next question. Like, how hard was it not to
so
laugh?
Hard.
Like, I mean, even like the scenes where I'm imagining just like Nearly Headless Nick, and you have this guy who's just like doing a voice probably from off stage. I would die straight up.
Yeah, Rupert famously a giggler. I think that is, you know, universally common knowledge. Rupert would giggle at anything and come, you know, when you're coming towards the end of the day, when you're working with 10, 11, 12 year olds, they're knackered. Mm-hmm. They're so tired. And everything becomes just funny and silly. But yeah, like working with Julie Walters and Mark Williams, who played our parents, you know, they are some of Britain's best comic actors.
Oh, yeah.
All the shenanigans would go on. The bloopers that are out there somewhere must be wonderful.
Oh, my God. But I'd love to see them.
Again, will we ever see them? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've seen some that happened on the second film, because when we had the rap party for the second film, they showed some of them at the party.
Oh, nice.
But they've never been seen since. They've never been seen again. And I would love to know where they went.
And this is why we are asking this question and have to ask it every time, because we don't have that much from behind the scenes and the bloopers. So life stories from you guys yourself is just
special. Feels like it's far enough down the road. I understand at the time that it would be a little bit cruel to kind of mock small children who are messing things up.
Yeah,
you know, going haha, look at that small child getting it wrong. But you know, we're all over 30 now, you know, I'm sure we can handle it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they can get everyone's consent signatures too. If you guys all sign off on it, then I can't see why it would be.
One day. Who knows? One day.
Yeah. We would love that.
I just love seeing actors like not be their character, because I feel like a lot of the times people, and you can probably speak to this way more than I can, like they see you as your character, but they don't realize, like, oh yeah, that's a real human being with a different personality from his character. Yeah. But in real life, it's just so fun to see you guys being just people on the set, dressed in these costumes, though. Seeing, like, Dumbledore just, like, checking his phone or something, you know?
I think, I have to say, though, I think I was just very Percy-like in the early days. I think any behind-the-scenes footage of me would just be going, stern at all times.
Grumpy.
I had no idea what was going on. You know, I took it all very seriously because I was like, this is enormous. And
yeah,
but like Percy, I was a very good boy, so I would I wouldn't be messing around.
You didn't pull any pranks, not a single one.
No pranks from me.
Wow, I'm sure the rest of the cast got up to a lot of shenanigans.
Oh,
for sure.
Oh yeah.
Did you ever have any pranks pulled on you?
No. Devon Murray was a bit of a naughty one for knocking me over, but I don't think he necessarily did it on purpose. So there's a bit, you know, when the fat lady portrait's been slashed open in Azkaban?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some inexplicable reason, the fat lady is now on a staircase. Never was in the earlier films, but... And we all go running off up the staircase, I think, at some point. But you can literally see me falling to the ground in that scene.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch you.
And that is partly me tripping over my robes and partly Devon Murray pushing me over as I go. So, yeah. Okay. Cheeky little buggers, some of them.
That's too funny.
Maybe one of the last questions we would have for you is there a role that you would dream of to have someday?
Any role?
Any role that you could play that you would love to do.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, there's loads of them.
You can name a few.
I think I would love to play Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors.
I think you would be a great Seymour, honestly.
And I think I'm just about the right age as well, I think.
Yeah, how old is he supposed to be? Like in his 40s, probably?
Who knows? I think you can play him 20, you could play him... Like the off Broadway one that's happening now, they're playing him sort of late 30s, and I think that feels about right. Mm-hmm. He's a bit sort of lonely bachelor.
He's been through a lot. Yeah, he's kind of like past the point of where people would be like, "Oh, are you getting married?" And he'd be like, "No." Yeah.
So I'd like to do that. I would kill to be King George in Hamilton. That would be a...
That's one of my dream roles too. Oh my God.
It's iconic. And you only have to do about 8 minutes work a night, which is even better.
Ideal. The audience. Everyone loves you because it's such... Oh, yeah. Let's get in cahoots. And I'll be your understudy if you want.
Okay.
Because
okay.
you have more cred when it comes to theater. So like, I'll be your understudy. I know we look exactly alike.
Yeah, yeah.
So this will work out really well.
And with a curly Regency wig on, it'll be fine. Nobody will know the difference.
Yeah, no one will know. Makeup does wonders.
Yeah, and if you don't shave for a couple of days, it'll be fine. So
secretly, I have a giant beard, you know?
You hide it well, my dear.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know. So many roles. So many roles.
I'm trying to think of what role I feel like you would be really... I don't know. I feel like in my head, you are... Percy is like your role because you just really embrace that.
And it's something that I can't and won't escape, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm a bit old for it now, but Bock in Wicked would be quite a nice one as well. You see, there's all musical theatre roles. I'd give it a few years and maybe The Wizard, but...
I think you would actually make a really good wizard in Wicked.
In a few years.
Yeah.
A few years. I think that's sort of 50 plus. Yeah, maybe if we went to The Wizard of Oz...
Yeah, that version of the Tin Man.
I've done a pantomime version of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay. Did you include, like, current songs in that?
Yes.
What current songs go with The Wizard of Oz pantomime? Do you remember?
Oh, well, I mean, they don't have to go with it. This is the wonderful thing about pantomime, is suddenly Dorothy will start singing something completely... Shut Up and Dance With Me was in it when we did it. Like, where does that come from?
Oh, yeah.
We managed to crowbar Car Wash into it, you know, at the car wash.
Oh, yeah.
But it was at the Whiz Wash.
Oh, at the Whiz Wash.
It was at the Whiz Wash because you had to be, like, wizarded in the Whiz Wash before you could get into the Emerald City. And So I've done The Wizard of Oz as a panto twice, and I did the Scarecrow. I was Scarecrow the first time, and then I was the Wizard the second time. Both times, it was great fun.
I like this visual in my head. I really want to be in a British pantomime now. I'm really like...
I want to see one.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find a British panto on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So check it out because it is quite the surreal experience if you don't know what you're getting yourself in for. The one thing you have to understand is that they all turn out basically being the same show with just different character names. So, you know, it is always prince and princess, love story, romantic, comedy, princess's comedy brother, who's the comic, And then there is always the pantomime dame, which is not a drag queen, although it's sometimes played by a drag queen, but it is a man in a dress.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been a part of the tradition. Very often it is just played as a man wearing a dress. You know, they don't camp it up. They don't feminize it at all. Like, it'll just be a man.
Burly guy with a beard wearing a giant dress.
Yeah, like, yeah, essentially. And quite often they all talk like that as well. So it's like, hello, mum. Yes, what is it, son? Yeah, it's a very bizarre experience. It's so hard to explain it, but it is brilliant.
I totally want to, like, this is like, this all sounds like my dream role, just like chaos at all points in time. I love it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah, I think when you come here to King Richard's Fair, maybe we should propose to the people who run the fair that we will put on a pantomime.
We bring a pantomime. Yeah, I think that's the plan. Pantomime would fit in perfectly at Ren Fair.
Yeah, I mean, the mud show is already there. Yeah. Pantomime is clearly the next step.
Absolutely. Right, there's a plan. We bring pantomime to America through the medium of the Ren Fair. Yes,
it's going to be great. Okay.
I think we will wrap up this interview. That was really lovely. And we still have a game to play if you still have a bit of time.
Oh, yes. I do. I have all the time.
Okay.
Oh, perfect.
I say all the time, as long as I can get a pizza before Uber Eats shuts. But I don't think Uber Eats shuts, so I think we'll be fine.
Yeah. Okay, so our game that we're going to be playing is Are You Puffin' Kidding Me?
Okay.
And this is the game where each person tells one fact about them to the group, and then the group must vote if the person is telling the truth or puffing with them. Each person who is guessing gets to ask one question of the person who's giving the statement. So it pretty much is, we're guessing if you're lying or not. And if you'd like to go first, Chris, you can. I gave us a theme. Mel and I usually have a better time thinking of a statement if we have a theme, and I chose holidays because this will be coming out in December.
There we go. Okay, I've got one. So when I was younger, I always wrote my letter to Santa Claus at Christmas,
mm-hmm.
asking for the things that I would like for Christmas. Not once did I ever get what I asked Santa for.
Never.
Never.
What were the things that you were asking for? Give us some examples.
So the thing I wanted pretty much more than I would say anything for years when I was little, there was a toy that was called Screwball Scramble, which was...
I've never heard that.
it was it's so hard to describe, but a quick Google will show you. It's basically this adventure obstacle course toy that you had, like, a little metal ball. You remember, like, the metal ball that was in the Mousetrap game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a metal ball like that, and it was on, like, this essentially obstacle course for the metal ball, but you had little levers that you had to pull and push and twist and turn to get the ball from start to finish over the thing, while it had things that were sort of bridges that were, like, wobbling up and down, and, you know, you had to kind of get it over through the maze and all that kind of stuff. I wanted one of those for probably 5 years. I never got it. I wanted all sorts of things. We have this thing in the UK. We don't have it anymore because it's online, but we used to have this thing in the UK. There's a shop called Argos, which is basically, actually, the best way to describe Argos is like if Amazon came in a catalogue form, you went to a warehouse and somebody went through to the back and came back with the thing that you wanted.
Okay.
And in this enormous warehouse is pretty much everything you could ever possibly need to buy realistically within your life. You know, you could get batteries, jewellery, or a treadmill. Or a microwave oven or a kettle or whatever. It's like sort of, yeah. But the back section of the Argos catalogue was always toys. And I would go through that and I would want all of it.
Naturally.
But not all of it. I wasn't ever into like action men or Nerf guns or thing. I wanted like the toy railway set.
Mm, yeah.
But it was always the really expensive stuff. Although I am an only child, I did essentially grow up in the Weasley house in real life. So yeah. So I think that's probably why, you know, Santa has a budget. Santa has a budget within the means of each individual family mm-hmm. he goes to, I guess.
I feel that. But,
yeah.
Juliana, do you have a question for him?
I'm questioning this because the toy that I was just looking at, that one that you mentioned, doesn't look like it's too pricey of a toy. And I'm just kind of wondering. I also kind of did the same thing as you, except with the Toys R Us catalog. And I would just pick everything out of the Toys R Us catalog and I'd write it on a list. And like once in a while, we get the things. But I too grew up in a Weasley style household. I have three other siblings. There's way too many kids in my house. I get the struggle of writing down something and like literally never getting it either. Mm-hmm. And just having your parents like not understand, be like, this is what I want. Can you not get me what I want, please. I'm gonna go with that it's true.
You said you never, not even once, got something that you put on the list. Not once. I mean, I'm sure you got something else that was great.
Don't get me wrong. Santa never did me bad, but he never did me entirely good.
Okay, I'll join Juliana and I say it's true.
Yeah, I'm a terrible liar. It's absolutely true.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we all know this from our own childhood, that you see these ridiculously expensive things, but you have no idea what these numbers even like mean. You know, see this thing and you think, this is so cool, I want it.
Yeah. You're like, my friends have it. Like, your parents are like, yeah, and like a million. They have a lot of things that are not, that we do not. It's like, okay.
Yeah. My parents are like, yes, we're teachers and your friends' parents are like software engineers. Yeah. So,
All right. So mine is very simple. I have once accidentally set the Christmas tree on fire in our living room and the curtains burnt down with the tree, of course.
I have one question. Where were you living when this happened?
We lived in a little rental house in a very small town, small village.
In Germany?
Yes.
Is that telling, Chris? Because you know about growing up in Europe. I do not. I know the American side of things.
Well, growing up in Britain and growing up in Europe are two very different things. very different things. And I think growing up in Germany, I've got a friend whose grandparents are German, and she still very much celebrates Christmas in a German capacity. Like she does Christmas on the 24th of December.
Yes.
You know, they do their presents and everything on Christmas Eve.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the one thing that they do that absolutely baffles me is that they have real candles on their Christmas tree, which is why I'm asking if this is in Germany, because if it was in Germany, I'm tempted to believe that you had real candles on your tree, which suggests that it might very well be true.
Yeah.
Logic. This is my Ravenclaw brain.
My mom's side of the family is German too, and I know she always tells me about how they used to have candles like in their tree, and like I actually have one of those German windmills, a little wooden German
windmill.
Yeah.
You put the candles in it and the heat makes it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would turn.
Yeah, we have one of those as well. Yeah.
I love them. Okay, I guess my only question, Mel, is how old were you when this happened?
I was 5 or 6.
Okay. You know, I think I'm going to say that this is true, because I think Chris is right in that you might have had like real candles on the tree. So that's probably how it happened, because originally I was thinking that like, OK, probably not, because there was like lights on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he might be onto something.
Yeah, I seem to be a better liar than Chris, because it's not true.
Oh, darn.
You see, you came with the backup facts. You did clever there. Mm.
Though we do have, of course, the Christmas wreath, so we would have real candles on that. But in the Christmas tree, we would have only these electric lights, because it would be completely insane to have a house with children and then you have real candles on there. So that,
It is insane.
Yeah, that would not be safe at all.
Okay, Juliana.
So my statement is that every year, pretty much for the most part, on Christmas Eve, me and my three other siblings would put on a show of The Night Before Christmas, the little book. My sister Marie was the narrator. Katie was Santa. I was Santa's elf. Not that that's a speaking role in any capacity. And then my brother Joey would play everything else, including the chimney, the stockings, the sleigh. So he would like be the chimney. He would go like this and we would jump through his arms, kind of, in a way. So my statement is, those are the roles. We did this non-musical pantomime every year. Joey played everything else. I played the non-speaking role of the elf. And then Katie played Santa and Maria was the narrator.
Yeah.
I have no questions. I think that's delightful. So I want it to be true.
Sounds great.
Chris is wishing that it's true.
Yeah. That fills my Christmas heart. Fills my Christmas heart with warmth and joy.
I do remember you said that your family was very much into making costumes and stuff. So I could definitely see that. Was the rest of your family, your cousins and so on, involved in this too? Or was this just a small family thing for your parents?
No, it was a small family thing for my parents. We would do like, a lot of the times we would do like a show after dinner. And sometimes I would even make a brochure for that, because I'm a professional.
I would love that to be true.
Okay, so we all think it's true?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yay!
Yeah. Yeah, Joey played everything. He was the sled. He was the chimney. He was like a present pile. He was
I love that.
We turn off the lights and put on just the Christmas lights and everything for it, too. It was pretty hilarious now to think about.
Oh, that sounds great. Okay, what we didn't tell you, Chris, there were points to be collected as well, because we have a tally that runs a full year. You have collected 1 point for the guests, Juliana collected 1 point, and I am catching up. I have collected 2 points. Ooh. And the current stats are, the guests are still leading with 11 points. Ooh. I am in second place with 9 points, and Juliana is in third place with 7 points.
How am I in third place?
Third or nothing.
I know, I'm wearing the correct costume for that.
That was great. Thank you so much for playing that with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing games. We love games. Yeah.
Okay, Chris, well, thank you so much for joining us. This was so lovely.
Thank you for having me. It's been a delightful way to spend a Saturday evening.
Good. We like to hear that. We'd love to have a good review, you know?
Yeah.
If our listeners want to find you, why don't you give us your contact information and maybe a little bit of information where they can buy tickets to the concert, too?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea. Just search the concert on Google.
Yeah.
Because we're playing all over Europe, and every different part of Europe has its own
Eventim
or Ticketmaster. So it's like, it's eventim.de for Germany, but I don't know, it's elsewhere. Some of the venues are selling their own tickets, but Google the concert. There's dates all over the place. Most of them will probably be me. If you start looking into 2023, it might not be me though, and I don't know who it will be, but it'll be somebody from the Harry Potter films, I'm sure. And in terms of where to track me down on the internet, I am predominantly on Instagram these days, which is at CW Rankin, C for Christopher, W for William, Rankin. I'm on Twitter, but I don't really tweet these days. I'm kind of starting to...
Yeah, us either.
Just slowly, slowly give that one up.
With the new chaos going on over there right now anyway.
Yeah, but hey, listen, I still look and I still check in occasionally, but that's at Chris Rankin. And then on Facebook, I think it's like at Chris Rankin Official or at Official Chris Rankin. If it's Chris Rankin and it's got a picture of me in a blue tick, it's me.
Okay.
Great.
Simple. I do have a TikTok. Don't ask me what it is. I can't remember. And I don't really post on it. I just doom scroll at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, that clocks.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. That was lovely.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It's been a delight. It's been a lovely chat.
Yeah. And listeners, if you'd like to get in contact with us over here on Puffcast, you can listen to us on all platforms where podcasts are found. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PuffcastPod. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Puffcast. Or if you'd like to send us some love in a long format for Chris, you can send it to PuffcastPod@gmail.com and we will forward that over to him. And if you'd like to support us over on Patreon for as little as $2 a month, that's less than a coffee. Thank you very much. You can go to patreon.com/puffcast. And this month, we actually donated to the Club Q shooting victims and their family members. So thank you all for helping
us.
Bravo.
Yeah.
It was so nice to have our friend David from Crooked Wands. He's donating 25% of his sales on his Etsy shop to that.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And our patrons donate $1 for every Patreon subscriber that we have. We donate $1 for them to our charity of the month. So yay, we're doing good here. We try. And if you'd like to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, we would love to read it here. And I'd love to send you a sticker in the mail and whatever the heck else happens to be in my apartment at that given time. So...
Just the cat. I don't know.
It literally could be. It could be truly anything. It could be like a sock. I could set you free from the Malfoys. You never know. It's all up in the air. Okay. So until next time.
Stay puffy.
And badger on.
Yeah. How can you tell that Santa is real? You can always sense his presence.
Happy Christmas!
Merry Christmas! Ho.
I hope that your presents are better than Juliana's jokes.
My jokes are great, and David's jokes are great too.
Which, by the way, go over to Patreon and listen to the dumb joke advent calendar that Juliana put up.
It's a classic now.
Go for it.